The following presentation, Overcoming Issues of Delivering IT Services in High Biosecurity Containment Buildings Using Wireless Mobility, VDI and Microsoft Link, was given by Aaron Street of Peerbright Institute at NetWorkshop 42 in April 2014.
Okay, so quick agenda of what I'm going to go through. Just a bit about the Peerbright Institute. Overview of why we need biosecurity, a bit of what it is. An introduction to a new laboratory, big project like yours. Some examples of the biosecurity issues affecting us, how we're looking to overcome them, and some lessons learned looking forward. So the Peerbright Institute, it was founded in 1914, so it's our 100th year anniversary this year. This is our mission statement. We do research into animal viruses, that's our main bread and butter. We've referenced laboratory, world reference laboratory, for a number of quite high profile diseases. And we're funded by the BBSRC, funded by them. And our claim to fame is we have the largest number of people working under high level biosecurity conditions on a single site in the UK. Sorry?
That you're allowed to tell us.
that research, I should say. So why do we need biosecurity? There's three reasons that are commonly quoted. To protect people, you're working with viruses that can affect people, make them ill, you don't want them catching them, so to protect them. Clean science, you don't want to contaminate when you're doing science, you want a clean environment to work in. And our main one is obviously we work with live viruses like foot and mouth. And as you know, in 2001 we had a little bit of an outbreak. It wasn't released by a laboratory, it was a naturally occurring thing, but it cost us £8 billion in the UK economy. So we're working with live viruses, we need to look after them. So what is it? Well, it's to prevent us releasing it. There's various legislation, we're under the specific animal pathogens order, and we're licensed up to and including the highest level. And it's very simple. Nothing comes out of the laboratories without being monitored, checked, treated, and so forth. So this is our project we're working on at the moment. High containment laboratory to house about 400 to 500 staff in total. It's almost entirely under containment. There's multiple layers of containment, but Toby will be discussing that more in his speech. Design started in 2002. I believe building started in about 2011. I didn't join until 2012. The actual construction of the building, that was completed and handed over to us in January this year. And we now have a year near enough to test all the systems as a single system, make sure that it'll work and it won't release viruses once people are inside it. So some basic facts, each wing, 42 meters. An idea of the complexity of it. There's three floors of plant room in this building. There's one floor of laboratories, so an awful lot of plant room, multiple layers of containment. Everything's inside, canteen, write-up areas, laundry, the works. And as I say, once it's built, not only will we house a large number of scientists on site, on the single site, in a single building. So it's all got to work very well together. Just a couple of pictures. We've got the write-up areas, the canteen, a bit of the plant room, and lots of these airtight doors you have to walk through to get around the building. This is kind of, when we talk about biosecurity, the main thing people talk about is the negative air pressure. The idea is you suck air out of the highest containment area of the building and you treat it through various filters, heat treat it, chemically treat it before you release it out. And that draws air in from the outside through the low containment areas. Any particles in the air get pulled in. So most of the laboratories and many of the areas have these double-doored lobbies, which are swipe card to get into, timed so you can't have them both open at the same time. We have these air-sealed walls, which is like a thick rubber paint. You can't attach anything to it. You can't make a hole in it, anything like that. We've got reinforced construction walls. These have got two layers of steel mesh in them, and it's not so much to make them airtight. It's because when you draw air out of a building, you create a negative pressure, and the building tries to collapse in on itself, and you don't want any movement that will break any seals in your building. So it's not very good for wireless. About 80 or 90 Faraday cages in a single building. We've got infrastructure, our cabling mainly. We have these lovely Rock-Tec seals. which you can break. You can put a fire and a new cable through it. Now, if you want to do that, you have to stop all science work in that wing of the building, put the cable in, reseal it up, and then spend about a week retesting all the seals and the air pressure, so you've got downtime. Very costly. It's not really something you do unless you absolutely have to. Unfortunately, going back to what you were saying, IT wasn't involved in the design of this building. There's no high-level access. There's no high-level network points. There's very few network points in the lamps themselves, and there's no network points in the corridor whatsoever. So, not ideal. Quite an issue. Getting things in and out of the building comes next. If you want to get a user in the building, getting things in isn't the problem. Getting things into this building is fine. It's getting anything back out and moving things from a high level of security, biosecurity, to a lower level where the issue. So it's complete stripped down. The only thing you can take in is your wedding ring. And coming out, again, another stripped down, and a 12-minute shower. So and you can't bring anything out with you, obviously. Moving equipment in and out, the same kind of thing. You can move things in through airlocks, but coming out, you've got autoclaves, 130 degrees. I've forgotten how many atmospheres of pressure of steam. Dunk tanks, disinfectants, fumigation cabinets, it's formaldehyde, gas. None of which, again, very good for any kind of technical electrical equipment. So you're basically, if something goes in, whatever it is, it's not going to come back out very easily. If something breaks inside, it's going to get thrown away. If you want to go and fix something inside, well, if you take any tools in to fix it, they're not coming out. So the idea is we want to keep as much outside as possible. So then going on to working practices. Now, when I was a zoologist, this workplace, their workplace, was kind of a well-organized laboratory. Now, a bit of a mess. But we're used to the screens, sitting down, typing, configuring, writing reports, so forth. Their main focus is their research, is their science. They don't want lots of computers in the laboratories. They just want to be able to read some things and enter notes and so forth. But they're not non-IT users or non-technology users. They have items, you know, from a couple of thousand pounds up to several millions of pounds that they want to. Most of these are starting to become connected to the network. We got the gene sequencer down at the bottom right. That produces, I think Tim was saying last night, you know, they can do a whole genome now in a few hours, and they produce gigabits and gigabits of data. Or, you know, so again, electron microscope to get higher and higher resolution, and we need to get this data around the buildings and deliver to our users. So these kind of things we have to consider when delivering into laboratories. As we say, different users require different services. The right up here is the labs, they're all within biocontainment. Some they want to sit down, type away, do reports, write their theses, write their journals. Others, they just want to read instructions, SOPs, take notes in the labs. Not much space in the laboratories. I mean, as we said, there's three floors, a plant room, one floor of the lab. Laboratory space is very expensive in this building, so we don't want six or seven PCs for every single scientist in the labs. Flexibility. They want more and more. They want different types of devices they want their data delivered to. They can't take their own device in. We can't have BYOD in this laboratory. Everything in this laboratory has to be provided by us. They want flexibility where services can be delivered to. More and more, they're wanting to enter information and read information as they move around the lab. When I was in a lab, there was one PC, and you did your science, and at the end of the day, you walked to it and you copied your notes up to it. They don't want that anymore. They want to be able to walk from their incubator to their plate reader to their anywhere and carry data with them, enter data with them. So we need to be flexible where we can deliver services to. Communications. They're moving around, they work in multiple labs, they work in their write-up area. Our current solution doesn't allow for that. They have to have a separate phone in each, a separate contact in each. They don't want that. They want to be able to contact and be contactable wherever they are. And again, support, getting support staff in and out, it's not a 5-minute process when you've got a 12-minute shower. And especially if things go wrong, you need to go out and back in and out and back in. You can't carry a bit of paper out with you with the port number written down on it. replacing faulty equipment, it's replaced. It's not fixed like it might be. You can't have a support company. Companies don't want to give you a new PC and not take the old one back. So the idea is you try and keep as much outside of containment as possible. So what we're looking at doing is taking three technologies and making a single solution out of them to answer all the questions I've been going through. Wireless, virtual desktops, and Microsoft Link. And we're at different stages with each of these. So what does wireless give us? Well, it gives us the flexibility to location and device. Any device now you buy, laptop, tablet, smartphone, and many of the equipment they're starting to put in supports wireless. And obviously, it doesn't matter where it is in the lab. It doesn't support high bandwidth, and that's true, but we realise that in a lot of the places, equipment we can hardwire in. But in a lot of the places, if you're just reading a PDF, or you're jotting down some notes, or you're making a phone call, I've said it's Faraday cage, so you've got an access point in every single lab, and they're 6 to 12 man labs. You don't need the high bandwidth, you just need to be careful, you know, your quality of service is sorted out. It obviously reduces the need for network points. Going back, we don't have many network points. So we're looking to deliver about 90% of our IT services in the building over wireless. How are we going to do that? Well, this is already mostly installed. A couple of wireless LAN controllers in high availability, resilience. A management system. We're going to use Cisco Prime to manage it all and monitor it all. We're going to use Cisco ICE and MobileIron as two security platforms so we control who's coming onto the network, what device is coming onto the network, and then what service we can deliver to those devices over the network. I'm looking at these new access points out from Cisco. As I said, we don't have any high-level network points, so these are wall-mounted, dado rail-mounted. They also give you four network points out the bottom of them. So by putting in them, not only do you get wireless, but you get a few extra network points. So as I say, that's hopefully going to answer our question of how to deliver and what we can deliver to. We've looked at these four things here. We haven't yet going ahead with them, but we're making sure we can deliver them. The kind of the asset and location tracking, the lone worker's alarm, and delivering 3G over the wireless. We have no real 3G or mobile signal on site at all. So to be able to use the existing infrastructure to extend our 3G services would be quite nice. VDI, again, we can deliver to multiple endpoints using VDI, much easier. Thank you. Workspaces, we can have a single instance of a user logged on somewhere, walk somewhere else, log back on, without the issue of having to reopen all their application things. Again, Toby's going to go more into detail on that on his electronic lab notebooks. Cost, we work out it's about £1,000 to provide a desktop, a standard desktop. We're looking at about £400 to provide a thing terminal. So not quite throwaway, but much more. If it breaks down, it's much easier. You can leave a couple inside, someone else can plug one in when it breaks and just boot it back up. And obviously it keeps all the servers, the hardware, and the management of it outside of our containment. VDI, we're still going through proofs of concepts at the moment. We're looking at VMware and Citrix, and we're looking at both the whole desktop experience, and we're looking at the thin client or the virtual, sorry, not thin client, thin app or the virtual app, where you can take a non-native app and deliver like a Linux app to a Windows desktop or to a iPad or to a tablet. Like I say, still going through this one, still, you know, ironing out exactly what we're going to deliver so we can make sure we can cover all the requirements. Then we get on to Microsoft Link. It's obviously safe space. It can be a soft phone, so it can run on whatever device they use. It gives them that single point of contact they're looking for, whatever the device they're logged onto, they keep their contact. It's got all the functionality of voice conferencing, call forwarding, voicemail that they're looking for. And the different types. And for us, it's a big cost saving over existing infrastructure. So it won't just be within the new laboratory where we're using this, we're running Link out across the whole of site. So this is how we're looking at delivering it. Standard resilient system. We're looking at bringing SIP chunks in over Janet. We're just testing that at the moment. We've got 5 on test. We're hoping to expand that soon. Again, the nice thing about Link is it's not just going to be it's delivered as a soft phone. We can deliver it to old school, you know, hard phones on the desk. You can buy Link phones. We can deliver it to any of the major tablets or mobile devices. They all have quite good Link clients on them now. And we can integrate it with our conferencing solution.
You have to move.
Do I have to move over here?
It didn't happen
yesterday. It's very good. We've got automatic lights in the new lab as well. So, it will integrate with our conferencing system so that we have a lot of conferences and presentations on site, so we'll allow the sites within either to present from within the biosecurity areas or to watch conferences while they're in the biosecure areas from their desk up. So what have I learned in the last 2 years? No one solution fits all. I think we all know that. So we're looking at these 3 technologies to produce one solution. In this, as you were saying, getting the design right the first time is absolutely crucial. Unfortunately, as I said, we weren't involved right at the start, but obviously if we get this one wrong, it's going to be a right pain to change it. The desktop laptop model is outdated. It's not used. Going on, you know, what people talk about BYD, people bring their own devices to work, but we're seeing that it's not people bringing devices, it's the desktop is no longer always the device of choice, and we have to move with that. Especially with scientists, we can't give them what we think they want. We're often a desktop, a keyboard and a mouse. That's not what they need, that's not what they want. We've got to adapt to them, give them what they want. And especially in a building like this, whatever solution we put in, we've got to be able to develop with the needs. We don't want to be stripping it out in 2 years' time and redoing it all again. As I said, it says there, we're not there yet. We've still got quite a bit of things to do before September, October when the building opens. We've said VDI is still not quite there. Proof of concept, we're hoping within a month we'll be moving ahead with that. Wireless, we already run the Cisco wireless infrastructure, so I'm just waiting on those new points to be released. So that should be okay. Link, we've been testing over the last year. We're starting to go live with it now. Seems to be working very well. And as I say down the bottom, getting it right, we'll have lots of happy scientists and they'll enjoy lots of good research and bringing lots of money into us. So just a few thanks, because obviously I haven't done all of this myself. There have been other people involved. Toby and Morgan's also here, not in the room at the moment, and the rest of the IT crowd back at Purbright. You were mentioning about getting involved very early on. Originally we weren't involved at all with the development team. We now sit on the development board. We've got quite a few projects coming on after this and more high security biosecurity watches, so very much involved with that and work very close with them. CAE, my account manager, who's been doing Phil, who's been doing a lot of work with me and things, and our BBSSE obviously for their funding and support. So that was very quick overview of what we've been up to over the last 3 years. Hope it was a bit informative. Any questions?
We've got time for a couple of questions if anybody has a question.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Mark Wolf, University. I have some people with biological containment facilities on campus, and they want IP phones on their desks in there, which will survive what they have told me are very nasty chemicals that they use for cleaning when they do a scrub down in Peru. What are you using in that sort of thing?
We're within the labs, we're not, as far as I'm aware, not planning. You can buy, is it
P67?
P67, which is basically, you put the phone inside it, and it's like a cabinet, so you can unlock it, it's sealed, it can be washed down. You mainly want to use them for emergency phones, but like you say, we will have some emergency phones in the building. Not... But it's not a standard thing we would use. But yes, you can get P67 and upwards, which will survive pretty much bomb blasts and, you know, fire hoses going on them. There's issues with, if you then open it, you've exposed the phone inside to contamination. What do you do at that point? Because you can't really clean the phone. Yeah, well, some of the other labs on site, they've tried just having a phone and saying, oh, you know, well, leave it a cheap phone. The trouble is, we found with things like the disinfectants we use and the formaldehyde, it will just sit there and eat away. The fumes in the air will eat away at the copper, and you don't know whether it's going to work when you actually need to try it. So, if you need an emergency phone, probably inside a sealed container and deal with it and try never to use it unless they actually need to.
In our animal houses, we actually have radios rather than telephones. We've got a radio in an IP67 bag. You can use the radio through the plastic. You don't have to hold it to your ear. And the radio's got a telephone breakout on it, so it's got a 9-digit, 10-digit keypad, so you can make a phone call and radio talk to make a phone call out. So you're going to just dump the bag, the whole bag through, and then there's no fixed.
Thank you, Eric.
No problem.
Thank you. We sure appreciate your time.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.